This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
I always had a private doctor. I didn't think I needed VA care. Then I learned VA is ranked above private care systems nearby and costs less. I'm getting the best care of my life with providers trained to treat veterans. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Well, hello, and welcome to Frothy, home of the fun, frivolous, lowbrow froth that your group chat excels at. We're here to talk about the best things in the world of pop culture, from celebrities to influencers and all of the nonsense in between. And you're joined by me, Elle, a London-based 28-year-old writer who spends a lot of time chatting and reading about the fun, silly topics that maybe your boss, your parents, your partner, whoever, questions why you enjoy so much. Each week, we're going to be talking about the best bits that pop culture has to offer, and this is your safe space to enjoy, dissect, and binge on the frothy nonsense that brings you a smile. Hello, folks. How are we doing? How is everybody? Are we enjoying the sunshine? I sure hope we are. I hope there is no sunburn, no sunstroke, no dehydration of any sort, because it's glorious, and I will not complain for that, because I am incredibly happy. I sleep very well in the heat. I am well rested, lightly tanned, having a wonderful time. Summer is here. But if you are not quite having the best time, whether or not it's because of the weather or something else, my friends and I, one friend in particular, have found the perfect cure for this. If you're a reader and if you're easily pleased, I think those are two things to caveat here. And it's cowboy romances. Okay, guys, I didn't really know it was a fiction of book. Fiction? Not fiction. I didn't even know it was a type of romance trope, but my goodness, all you need in life is a cheap, surface level cowboy romance to lift the spirits. One friend, it's just a bit of a crap time at the moment, if we're going to be entirely honest, but we definitely brightened the world, or her world, with some cowboy romances. I can't recommend them enough. As she said, very little character development, very sort of ABC. You know, attractive woman meets attractive man. There's a little flirtation. They get things going. They fall out and break up around the 75% mark of the book. They're back together by the end. The world is a good place again. They ride off into the sunset together with a happy ever after. I'm not saying they're groundbreaking, and I'm definitely saying that structure is copied and pasted throughout every book in any of the cowboy romance series you will find. But that doesn't matter, because they bring you joy. They make me happy. I hope they make you happy. I think it's worth your time if you're looking for even a palate cleanser, if you're reading and you're a bit bogged down. And yeah, let me know if you find one. I can tell some friends, Liv in particular, will be rolling her eyes at this, because this is totally not her vibe. But if it is your vibe, there's no shame. Come join me. Our first story is not one I could have predicted coming 2 weeks ago, but has unsurprisingly blown up. Now we are where we are, which is incredibly unhelpful. This is, of course, the news that Alex Cooper, host of the podcast Call Her Daddy, came out in a recent documentary and made allegations of sexual assault or misconduct against her former coach for university football, or soccer if you're in a different part of the world. Alex is, of course, the host of Call Her Daddy, has been that host, I want to say, 6 years. I could be wrong there. And Call Her Daddy is obviously, I would say, the biggest podcast for women in their 20s and early 30s. She has grown that from absolutely nothing to where it is now. She obviously, it was obviously started off as a two-person, two-host podcast. It's now just obviously hosted solo by Alex. There is a very big backstory there. It, at one point, was owned by Barstool Sports. I'm not going to get into it because it would take us at least an hour. But what I would say is that if you are interested in the background or the starting point or whatever you want to phrase it of Call Her Daddy, Shameless Media have done an excellent deep dive on this. I think it came out last year, if not the year before. I would thoroughly recommend it. I think it's one episode, it could be two. But you learn an awful lot. They do a very cohesive, very good job of explaining what happened when, what went down, and why Alex is where she is now. And I personally would say it is well worth your time. That aside, Alex recently had a documentary come out, a two-part documentary called Call Her Alex. You can watch it on Disney, but it was released as part of the Tribeca Festival Films. And towards the end of the first episode, Alex, who in America for university was a Division I university football athlete, which means a lot more in America than it does in England. I don't think we have this kind of levels of sport at university, maybe bar rowing, but I'm not going to get into that world of sports. What I would say is that it's basically, from my understanding, the level below professional football. And it meant that she was given a scholarship to Boston University to play football there, but obviously then meant she studied for free or for heavily reduced rates. I can't quite remember now. But she reveals towards the end of the first episode, and it is maybe the final third of that first episode is all about this storyline. And she reveals that she was sexually harassed by the head coach, Nancy Feldman, from 2013 to 2015. And not only does she talk about this, but her mum, her dad, and her best friend from university and from the football squad, or the soccer squad, they all shared their own experiences of what Alex went through. And my understanding is that it's the first time that Alex has ever shared anything about this publicly before now. In the documentary, she talks about how her coach talks about her body, asked about her sex life, and really sort of singled Alex out for attention in ways that none of the other girls on the squad were ever focused on. And part of her recount also included the fact that she sat down with her parents and the university to report this harassment, and the university didn't take any action at the time. So this all comes out in the documentary. Huge news, huge allegations, and I have no idea if Boston University knew it was coming. I'd argue that if they'd already been sat down and spoken to once, they obviously would have known what a big star Alex had become. It shouldn't be a surprise that at some point this was going to come out, and obviously it has done so. And earlier this week, so about a week after the documentary dropped, Boston University obviously issued a statement, and they said that they had a zero tolerance policy for sexual harassment. They went on to say, and I'm going to quote here, "We have a robust system of resources, support and staff dedicated to student well-being and a thorough reporting process through our Equal Opportunity Office. We encourage members of our community to report any concerns, and we remain committed to fostering a safe and secure campus environment for all." Which, if we're to take Alex at her word, and famously Alex can be taken at her word, she is incredibly blunt. The first year or so of Call Her Daddy, the sexually explicit content that this woman shared, she gave such thorough details about her sex life and what she was doing with who and when. Obviously, those people she was engaging with were kept anonymous. But point being, Alex doesn't hold her punches. She doesn't ever have really boundaries. Well, she obviously does have boundaries somewhere. But point being, she is known for being blunt, for sharing it, for saying it how it is. And I think the power there is that when she then speaks out about allegations like this, people take her at her word. And so people, viewers, myself included, trust that she did go to the university with this news and that they didn't take action. And so that has therefore obviously disagreed with their current statement. In the documentary, Alex also said that the university told her and her family that they wouldn't be firing the coach, despite what had been raised and reported. And Nancy actually coached the women's football team for 22 years in total and retired in 2022. So 7 years after Alex stopped playing football for the team. And I think what really hit hard is the statement she said, which was, "The minute I stepped back onto that field, I felt so small. I just felt like I was 18 years old again, and I was in a situation with someone in a position of power who abused their power, and I felt like I wasn't the cool her daddy girl. I wasn't someone who had money and influence or whatever. I was just another woman who experienced harassment on a level that changed my life forever and took away the thing I loved the most." And since that news has dropped about the Boston University statement and obviously about the allegations Alex has made, it's also been reported that 99 athletes coached by Nancy have written letters to the university stating that they never felt unsafe as her coach. So we've had 99 people coming out in defense of Nancy and obviously, I guess, therefore against Alex. Now, look, I wasn't there, so I can't say that Alex is telling the truth factually. I can't present you with the facts. What I can say is that Alex has built a name and a reputation, a brand and a podcast off of being truthful and bearing all and oversharing and having a real connection with her audience. That has somewhat changed in the past few years as she's moved more into a interview style podcast. But very recently, she came back to the podcast for a solo episode and talked about her and her husband and their decision not to have children just yet. And was, once again, incredibly honest, bared all, no boundaries between her and the audience. And I think that is an incredibly powerful thing. I think especially in the world of social media that we're in currently, where audiences expect you to bear absolutely all. I mean, if you widen that line of argument, you look at the fact that people are now looking at live streaming their weddings or filming TikToks as the date goes and having those uploaded to make sure that the audience that brought them, you know, the opportunities and the wealth and the status get what they quote-unquote feel they deserve, and you know, the audience got them there, got them to this pinnacle, this huge point in their lives, and therefore they have to give back on the day, immediately, no time delay, ASAP.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter. Hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
And, I mean, we could go into a whole other argument about or conversation around what that means and the circular nature of content creation and the performing monkey element of content creation and where I think we're heading and all of this. And I'm not going to dive into that. But what I would say is that in a world where viewers, followers, supporters expect that level of dedication to them because they got the creator there, they deserve to be brought into the inner circle. I think Alex has maintained that relationship very well with her audience, built obviously from the very beginning of her podcast, despite the nature change of her podcast, has managed to maintain that. And I think with that very close connection between her and her audience, Boston University are now facing not only allegations, but allegations made by a very powerful woman with a very strong backing in the public eye. And I mean, I can't tell you where this will go from here in terms of legally or what Nancy will choose to do next. But I think that it was a very clever move on Alex's behalf because I think she didn't need it to sell the documentary. People are already interested in her. She has a huge following online. She is beloved by women, again, as I said, in their 20s and early 30s. She didn't need this as a sort of clickbaity element or as a trauma or a horror to draw people in, feed the audience, etc. She chose to share this in a format she felt comfortable doing in a very powerful setting it's there to last. It can be very easily clipped and shared online. It won't be lost in the same way a podcast is. Granted, those episodes don't really go anywhere, but they're much harder to sort of go back through and find. This is a two-part documentary. Everyone knows exactly where it is. Anyone can look at it any time. And I think it has a much stronger impact by being shared this way with the audience that she has built in the time frame that she has done it. And I suspect that was hugely talked about, very well planned. Alex doesn't do anything by halves. We see that in the documentary. Her husband is incredibly involved in the content creation, the direction of her business. And while a horrific thing to have happened, I do think very clever to have used that, or to have used the platform she has to share that news. I'm not going to go into any more, but I think a very clever use of content, channels, and marketing in so many ways without, and I cannot stress this enough, without removing the human element of it and the actual trauma of it, because it's foul and it shouldn't have happened. And I'm struggling with my words because I find it so uncomfortable and I do not think it's in any way okay, but I think she has taken back so much power by sharing it like this. And I am interested in how her and Call Her Daddy's marketing team and the team behind the documentary decided to share this story, because I think it was highly effective. Our second story is something we're talking about simply because it has made me laugh, and therefore I think it's worth your time. And this is the news that, so we've recently, David Beckham has received a knighthood, which is, you know, great going, well done David. You've got to have put some work into it to achieve one, to receive one, whatever the word is. And the coverage of his knighthood has been so broad, with the knighthood itself being such a small detail in the stories that are being reported, that I can't even tell you off the top of my head what he received this knighthood for. What I can, however, tell you is that everybody and their mother is still very, very focused on the supposed family feud between David and Victoria and Brooklyn and his wife, Nicola. And this is a feud that has been going on. No, let me clarify. This is a supposed feud, a believed feud, a feud that has been interpreted by fans, internet sleuths, gossip forums, you name it. That's kind of where it's been talked about. It's never once been confirmed by anybody, like, legit, but it's become such a sticky rumour that they cannot shift it. It started around 3 years ago when Brooklyn and Nicola Peltz got married, and it was a surprise to many that Nicola didn't wear a Victoria Beckham design or a Victoria Beckham wedding dress. And that was interpreted to be because they had some sort of falling out, they didn't get along, and therefore she didn't want to wear a dress by her mother-in-law. Nicola has come out and said this is fundamentally not true, and that the only reason she didn't wear a Victoria Beckham wedding dress is because there wasn't time to have one designed and made before the wedding. Which, on a surface level, absolutely makes sense, but my entire understanding of their wedding has always been that it wasn't a shotgun wedding, and that, you know, there was a proposal, she obviously said yes, and they then had as much time as they wanted to plan the wedding, which would kind of make you think there was enough time to pick who was designing the wedding dress, get it designed, have it made, it be picture perfect, etc, etc. So, and maybe that isn't the case, maybe that is me completely misremembering, misunderstanding, whatever you want to call it. I have never been married, I've never had a wedding dress made, I've never had any dress made, so I don't really know timelines. The closest I get is having things tailored, because I'm ridiculously short, and that always takes about a week or so, a little bit longer if it's slightly more complex dress. But I've got three things at the tailors currently, and they're all coming back in a week, and it's two dresses and a pair of trousers. So I'm getting massively sidetracked, but what I'm saying is it's always been a slightly flaky line of defense, and people haven't been shy about saying that. They also haven't been shy about the lack of belief around anything other than this feud. So post-wedding, we had sort of, I would say, more of an effort by Nicola and Victoria and the Beckhams as a whole in posting very positively about each other, trying to show a united front, a very sort of like loved up family dynamic without it being overkill and obsessive and, you know, verging on family vlogger-esque content. And this, again, wasn't really believed. People saw this and interpreted it as, oh, they're trying to cover up the feud. They're trying to hide it from us. Which actually, on like such a level, is totally bananas. Because if you're not taking someone for their word, then how can they demonstrate or prove or evidence what their norm is or what the facts are, if that is the case? Because you're just, there's no reason at that point. It's like arguing with a brick wall. There's no, like, that belief about the family feud is set in stone. So that was obviously about 3 years ago. Gossip since then has kind of quietened down, though again, no one is moving away from the family feud rumour. It's fundamentally believed at this point. And then earlier this year, we had David Beckham turn 50, and he marked the occasion with a week of celebrations. They were in the Cotswolds, they were in France, they did anything and everything. There was at least one big family party. Some really beautiful photos came out of that. And what was immediately evident is that Brooklyn and Nicola were not in any of these photos. They didn't post photos themselves, they weren't in any of the group shots. And fans also noticed that neither of them wished David a happy birthday online. Which again, if you apply it to a normal family, I don't think it's that weird. Because if I wished my dad happy birthday on Instagram, he wouldn't see it and he'd still be waiting for his birthday card. I think we have to bring an element of reality into this conversation that I think it's fundamentally missing. But I also understand the idea they do live in sort of the public eye, the public world. They do operate on socials, and so there is that element to the conversation as well. The BBC got involved in this conversation with their reporting of David's knighthood, and they said the reason for Brooklyn's lack of appearance at the party was because that his younger brother Romeo attended with Kim Turnbull, who it has been rumoured that Brooklyn dated in the past. I don't think that's ever been confirmed, and I believe Kim came out relatively recently to again say those rumours aren't true, she's never been with Brooklyn, and, you know, trying to clear it up. The BBC, when they reported this, claimed it came from an unnamed source. I trust the BBC, I have no doubt they did speak to somebody. Whether that person is actually in the know, it's a whole other debate. Either way, that was the reason it was claimed that Brooklyn and Nicola were not at the birthday party. Following on from that, we had Father's Day, and Victoria and David posted very normally. Photos of all of the children appeared with very lovey-dovey captions. David's in particular was very heartfelt, genuine, typical dad, if you know what I mean. I'm going to read it out just because it made me laugh. He says, "My most important and favourite job in life is being a dad. I'm so proud of you all, and like Daddy, sorry boys, tells you every single day, I will always be there for you no matter what. Mummy, thank you for doing the most important part and making me a father. There is no greater gift in life than making me a dad. Happy Father's Day. I love you kiddies more than you could imagine." So, really loved up, and very much sticking with the approach that Victoria and David have taken over the past 3 years, which is not addressing the rumours, the potential feud, not talking about any of it. It wasn't mentioned in their Netflix documentary. They've just completely ignored it. And I think, you know, taking the approach, if you starve a rumour of oxygen, it will eventually die a death. I think this rumour is proving to be particularly stubborn. What interested me most about the BBC's coverage of this knighthood feud, whatever you want to call it, is that they spoke to a celebrity crisis PR expert called Lauren Beeching, and she made some interesting points which I'm going to sort of read out to you because I think it's worth your time. One point being, once you start being spoken about like a reality TV family, your reputation starts to slip. She said, "The Beckham brand has always seemed to be aspirational, not accessible. But since the documentary, there's been a notable increase in how much the family share on their social media accounts, which puts them closer to being reality stars." and that therefore pulls them away from legacy building and more into soap opera territory, which was never their lane. The BBC also spoke to Matt Navarra, a social media consultant, who obviously reiterated the point we all know, that fans expect to see signs of social closeness from the families they follow. So that's not necessarily like just the Beckhams, it's anybody where there's a public facing couple, as in both parties have open or public social accounts, or a family element where mum and one of the teens or a couple of the older kids have social accounts. You know, they expect to be able to see birthday posts and supportive comments and engagement with each other's accounts. They expect to be able to see the family dynamic played out online in front of their own eyes, you know, on a basic level as mutually following each other and that kind of thing. And that when they don't see this, when fans with that parasocial relationship don't observe that, feel that it's missing, they interpret and read that as tension and difficulties behind the scenes. And we see it ourselves in our own public lives, private lives, when you'll be following somebody and you clock that, oh, you know, this could be a school friend. You clock that you've not seen their girlfriend in a while, or their boyfriend in a while, or their living room looks different. And so from that you can work out, oh, well, maybe they're not together anymore. Maybe they've moved towns. Maybe they've, you know, upped and moved out or whatever it is. And it gets the gossip train going and you put it on your girls group chat and it goes from there. And within 10 minutes you've worked out exactly what happened and when the breakup was. And it goes from there. So, you know, it's something we don't just apply to celebrities, but it is something that we take from our very normal lives and do apply to the wider celeb world. What I think is incredibly interesting is that it's that mix of parasocial relationship along with a sticky rumor that doesn't seem to be going anywhere, along with the growing presence of the Beckhams online, that has meant that this idea of a feud has gone absolutely viral. And I think that's partly because family drama is relatable. To see it play out on a elitist level, I guess you could say, or a level that feels so removed from yourself, it's engaging, it's interesting, and it catches your eye. And I think with that, posts on the topic will receive higher engagement because it is something interesting, it's something curious, and we all like to people watch and gossip. And that therefore influences algorithms because those posts are more popular, and that pushes the idea out wider. And it doesn't matter that the idea might not be based in fact, because at that point, it's hit the right algorithm. The algorithm has learned about this engagement. It pushes it out. You get more people talking about it, and it spreads like that. I think it just reflects the idea that people love to see those that they perceive to be doing better than themselves as having a tough time. And again, we see it with trolling, we see it with horrendous messaging you get online. And yeah, built to go viral, and it absolutely has gone viral, and I don't see them shifting this rumour. In all honesty, I don't think there's a feud, partly because I think feud is such a strong word. I don't know anybody feuding with anybody. It's medieval in some sort of way. There's always a chance that things aren't rosy behind the scenes, but there's also every chance that things are completely fine and that Brooklyn and Nicola are just choosing not to live out every family dynamic or every relationship within their family out in the public, and therefore things are completely fine. They wish David a happy birthday. They couldn't go to his party for XYZ reason, but you know, a gift was sent, a card was sent, a phone call was made, whatever it was, they met up in person for lunch. And we wouldn't know that unless they posted, and there are so many options there, but people see the lack of posting and then therefore jump on it. And it could just be that they're just not living that element of their life publicly. I would say that argument falls apart a little bit when you factor in how besotted Brooklyn seems to be with Nicola and how public he is in his love and affection and sort of adoration of her on Instagram in particular. And, you know, but it could also be that actually that's his boundary. He's really happy to share his love letters to his wife online with the whole world out on Instagram captions, but he doesn't want to write his personal heartfelt happy birthday message to his dad on Instagram captions. Maybe that's where his boundary is. It'd be a peculiar boundary, I give you that, but everyone does have a boundary, and I completely understand why why you want to protect some relationships more than others, or why you feel some are stronger and can withstand the social criticism that comes with being online. I don't know. I think it's something to think about. What I would also say, though, is that I don't think that this conversation around the feud is worrying the Beckhams in any sort of way. I would be gobsmacked if it was. You know, this is a family that has faced backlash before, is well-versed in controversy. Victoria was just... I mean, I think being a pop star in the late 90s, early 2000s is hard work no matter what. So I think online conversation around a potential feud between her son and husband, I don't see that worrying her whatsoever. I think we also need to factor in that David, again, has had some really big controversies throughout his career and is still, I would argue, beloved by the British public, but especially by a certain generation of football fans. He, I would say, is our most famous footballer and is treated with so much respect because of that. You know, he could do a lot of wrong and I think be forgiven by the wider British public. And he has. In 2003, he was accused of having an affair with his personal assistant when, I believe, the World Cup, the Football World Cup, was talked about being hosted in Qatar, or it was hosted in Qatar. He was heavily involved with that and again faced huge backlash there. In 2017, he had his emails leaked where he talked badly about a singer who was receiving an award instead of himself. You know, that's quite sore loserish. Then stupid shit, like, I think he wore the wrong dress, not as in physical dress, he wore the wrong dress code to the royal wedding, which, you know, very British mistake, but it was talked about, he was pulled apart, they were criticised, but they very much lived through it. And look, I don't know if or when this feud rumour is going to shift. I do think it's going to take something huge to get rid of this conversation, and I do think it would be something to the level of Brooklyn and Nicola naming their first child after Victoria to demonstrate to the public that there is absolutely nothing going on here and that you've entirely misread the situation. I don't think that will happen because, again, I don't think the feud worries them, and I think giving up the name of your firstborn for a media PR move is insanity and just completely deluded. But we shall see. Either way, David Beckham, as we remembered, has now received a knighthood. I just think no one knows because it has been entirely lost in this soap opera style conversation that we're all still having 3 years on. Our third and final story is potentially an entire reflection on my algorithms online, and not really a story at all, but it is stalking me, haunting me, whatever you want to call it at this point, and I can't not talk about it. And this is the rise, or the resurgence, of Dani Harmer. If you don't know who Dani is, she played Tracy Beaker on CBBC for what feels like most of my childhood, because she was not only Tracy Beaker at the Dumping Ground, she then came back to be Tracy Beaker, staff member of the Dumping Ground. I think that was around 2010, 2011, and then she was Tracy Beaker the child at the Dumping Grounds in more like the 2006, 2007, 2008 kind of era. I could have got those dates slightly wrong. Either way, she's not been on my TV screen in years, but she was a huge part of my childhood. And the phrase bog off and all sorts, if you didn't have, you know, paid for TV, if you weren't a Sky kid, you were a CBBC kid. I was a CBBC kid, and Tracy was just like, I just thought she was so cool because she was able to speak up and say what she wanted. And I was this very shy child who wouldn't have dared shout at adults the way she did, but colour me impressed, an idol of sorts, let's say. And I've not really thought about her since, I'll be honest with you, until all of a sudden she has created a TikTok account. She is on my TikTok. She is chatting away and she's very honest. She's totally clueless about how to work the app, but she's giving it a good go. And she has just totally blown up, as is expected. So much so that she is now on the Saving Grace podcast. She has had articles written about her. So in late May, The Independent reported that she'd obviously shared that she was perimenopausal and her experience there. That is something that she shared on TikTok. She also shares her kids on TikTok a little bit. And it seems to be general chit-chat, mum content, and her just sort of having a giggle. And it's, she's just really fucking funny, if I'm going to be honest with you. A little cringy at times and a little millennial, but that's who she is and we love her for it. She is sitting at about 3 million likes currently. She's following 220 people on TikTok and she's already grown to a whopping 357,000 followers, with videos really easily hitting anywhere between 30,000 views to sort of 200,000 views, 500,000 views, depending on what it is, and I guess, you know, what algorithm it hits. But people are loving her, and I don't know if it was a spontaneous decision for her to rejoin, not rejoin, but her to join TikTok, if it was encouraged by management, if she is still with management, any of that. But whoever's brainwave it was, has, it's totally paid off. I think especially if she's looking to relaunch any sort of career, I think we see the same kind of discovery here as we did with Louise Pentland, who was obviously way back in the day, sprinkle of glitter on YouTube with the opening Aloha Sprinklerinos, if you know, you know. And, you know, had a certain style of content for a good while that her audience grew up with her doing. And then as she obviously matured herself, she became a parent, she got divorced, she got repartnered, had another child, she shifted her content to more mature adult content because that's who she was. And a load of us dropped off because we were substantially younger than her, and she was obviously making content aimed at us originally and then wasn't, and therefore we naturally didn't engage with it. Come to now, where she is making the same type of content on TikTok, and those of us who watched her when we were younger have now grown up and are suitable for that content and have rediscovered her and Baby Glitter, who was obviously no longer Baby Glitter, but Darcy, and building her own sort of social channels and career and account, or whatever you want to call it. And I think it's almost a mirror image here. You know, Dani's come back into our lives at the perfect point. She has hit her viewers once again with content they can engage with and on a platform they're using. And I don't know, I think it's really flipping clever. I have no idea if it was planned. I think it's an excellent way to relaunch a career. I may have already said that, but either way, I'm enjoying it. I can't wait to see what she does next. I really hope she gets into some sort of presenting, because she's still natural in front of the camera and I think it works. Up next, it's time for Popped a Pin, which is something I shadow drive this week and I'm hoping to come back to. Last week, I popped a pin in the Unplanned Podcasts episode with Micah and Sarah. They are another TikTok couple, and I discovered them, I think, pretty early on into their TikTok content, because they joined TikTok what they would call as late, so mid to late 2021. Yeah, discovered them. He was making funny, stupid videos. She got involved. One that really blew up that I remember going absolutely viral was when you sort of have a picture of yourself, then you have a picture of your partner, and then they flip really quickly backwards and forwards between the two photos, sort of seeing how much you and your partner look alike. And I'll be honest, Sarah and Micah, I think it was clear they did look alike. On this video, all that changes is length of hair and facial hair. Like, it's uncanny how much these two look alike. And they obviously blew up from there. They put a lot of hard work in, I think it's fair to say, and that's very clear from the podcast. They switched from being musical theatre workers and touring with shows to getting office jobs in financial firms so that they could work a normal 9-to-5, come home in the evenings and have time for TikTok, which has paid off substantially. Fascinated, guys. I really enjoyed the chat. Wasn't expecting to enjoy it quite as much as I did. What I loved is that they were really honest. You know, Sarah was actually married when Micah first met her. Her ex-husband came out as gay. Obviously, that relationship ended. And then they got together. And what fascinated me is that they got together, were like completely together from the off, and then made the decision to not sleep together anymore until they got married, and didn't sleep together then for a further 3 years, which I don't know, I loved the dedication and the commitment to each other. And you know, it was Micah's ask and they stuck with it, and obviously it's worked out for the best. They're married, they've got a little child, they make hysterical content. I don't know, a real deep dive from someone who I think, if I'm going to be honest, I had a really surface level impression of, simply because that's all I get from TikTok, because that is all you get on TikTok with so many creators. Well worth a listen. I can't recommend it enough. And then something I've put a pin in this week that I'm hoping to come back to is Alex Warren's album, You'll Be Alright Kid, which isn't necessarily the newest of releases anymore, but it's something that I haven't listened to in full yet, despite being a big fan of some of his other songs. And I think especially because he is currently on track to have his song Ordinary reach 3 weeks at the number one spot of the Hot Billboard 100, whatever you call it, I don't know. Either way, he's writes beautifully, he sings incredibly well. It's music I really enjoy listening to, writing to, working to, you know the jam. And I've not quite managed to get through the entire album because if I'm not chatting away to you guys, I've probably got my head in a book. And I just haven't had the time. I would like to give it the time because it looks really well, it sounds so far incredibly beautiful. So I'm going to give some time to the album this week, and I will hopefully come back and sing its praises to you next week and encourage you all to listen to it in full if you have not already. And then of course it's time for some recommendations. My first recommendation this week, guys, is an article from The Cut titled Why Are People Mad at Sabrina Carpenter This Time? I ummed and ahed about whether or not to talk about Sabrina Carpenter, her new album cover, and the huge conversation around this on Frothy, and then decided that I was going to slightly miss the boat with it because of when Frothy was going to come out, simply because of what I was doing this week with work, and I suspected that what I was going to say would have already been said by a number of other podcasts, and if you're listening to them as well, I didn't want to be filling your ears with the same waffle. So we've gone for different waffle this week, but instead I'm recommending the article to you. It's a very funny tone. It's very clear that the author is on Sabrina's side in this conversation. But I will say that having looked at the album cover, which if you don't know, it's Sabrina on all fours, looking at the camera, and on the left of the album cover or the right of her, depending on which angle you're looking at, there is what appears to be a man pulling up some of her hair in quite a provocative, kind of messy way. You can't see much of the man. I think it's kind of cut off from like just above the elbow. So you get some of his chest, one of his legs, one of his arms, no neck, head, anything like that. And in some ways, very aimed at the male gaze. And in other ways, really, she knows what she's doing, let's be honest. She's not just gone, oh, I look cute in that one, I'll stick it up. She knows it's going to cause conversation, and that it has. I personally think the album is incredibly clever marketing. I think if you were to deep dive it, then sure, you can end up in these conversations about whether or not it's truly feminist, or whether it's pro-misogynistic abuse, or whether it's anti-woman, and all of this and that. I would also argue, does it need to be deep? Does everything need to be psychoanalyzed at such a level? I don't know. But I think she wanted to get you guys talking, us talking, whatever you want to phrase it as. And that's exactly what she's done. I think it's clever. I think it works very well for the brand she has built and the brand that works for her, you know, especially when we factor in that Sabrina Carpenter was making music for a good number of years, rebranded somewhat, they changed who was dressing her, they have to have done, her wardrobe changed and she skyrocketed. And again, I'd argue somewhat dressing for the male gaze, but it flipping works and she is taking all of our money, so I'm not gonna get into any further into it, but I would give it a read. And it is totally okay if you fundamentally disagree with me on this and you do hate the album cover, because I understand why. I'm just not quite in that camp. And then my second recommendation is actually also another feature that I'd like you to read, if possible, because I think it's worth your time. This is a feature on Gabby Logan, who was featured in The Times, and the article's called I Was Told I Was Too Competitive for a Woman. And I loved it. I really, really loved it. I don't know too much about Gabby. I see her on the TV when we've got sporting stuff on the TV, and she's an excellent commentator. She really flippin' knows her stuff. But I was aware that she was a retired athlete, but I don't think I could have told you much more than that. I loved it. It was really quite funny. She shared a lot of her background. She's taking over from Gary Lineker on Match of the Day. I loved the fact that the journalist very brazenly asked how much she was earning, and she very cleverly just went, nope. Like, that's been settled. I don't need to talk about this. I'm not going to talk about this. I suspect she's earning huge amounts of money. I hope it's as much as Gary Lineker was paid. Whether it is, I don't know. Whether that's a realistic hope, I suspect not. But we shall see. I mean, we won't see because she's keeping it private and good for her. And to explain the tone of the piece, I'm going to read you just a smidge of the article where it kind of leads up to how she met her husband. Early in 1999, Logan was on her way home from dinner with a girlfriend who suggested a late drink in a bar. Logan didn't want to go. She was still queasy from an uncomfortable New Year's Eve dalliance, a cigar-smoking wide boy she'd snogged and who wanted her to do cocaine in the lavatories at a London cabaret. She didn't. I think it's fun. I think it shares a good level of detail. I think it catches your eye. And I think it brings you on side if you're someone like me who wasn't not on side, but was also, she was a lot off my radar. And I'm now a firm fan. But again, as we all know, easily swayed, very little backbone here, but worth your time. If you got this far, thank you so, so much. I apologise for being a little bit all over the shop at the moment, folks. Life is busy. If you like what you heard, you can, of course, follow us on TikTok and Instagram, or you can subscribe and support the podcast on whatever platform you're listening it on. It really helps Frothy in the charts, and I greatly appreciate it. Have a lovely week, and I'll speak to you next week. Bye, guys. We'll be right back.